This is the Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner, the podcast for anyone supporting a pregnant woman to achieve her dream birth. I'm Sally Ann Beresford, a doula, author, and antenatal teacher, and throughout these episodes, I will be sharing with you tried and tested tips that help you to ensure that any birth you attend is a positive experience. Hello and welcome to episode 10. We made it. The first 10 episodes are all done and dusted. And I wanted to make a real point of concentrating on the essentials that I felt that any birth partner needed to know within these first 10. And so from now on, I'm going to start introducing guests, talking about a wide variety of aspects about the birth partner's role, not just my top tips, but the things that other people also want to share with you. So I just want to remind you quickly before we get started on birth plans, what I said in the last episode about my special offer to celebrate these first 10 episodes. I'm going to be giving away 5 copies of my ebook, Labour of Love, The Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner. And the way to win a copy of this ebook is to give me a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts, to leave me a review and screenshot it and send it to me, sallyann@birthability.co.uk, and I will be announcing the 5 winners at the start of episode 11. Okay, let's move on. What is a birth plan? Well, a birth plan is a set of preferences that each person has decided on that includes everything she needs to convey to her care providers. This is about making a list of things that she wants for her ideal birth scenario. So let's start off with vaginal birth. Writing a set of birth preferences for a woman who is planning as straightforward a birth as possible. From the outset, she needs to be really clear and concise in any description she gives. There is no need for waffle, there's no need for pleases and thank yous, there's no need to mention anything that is not relevant to the midwife. Let's look at an example of a birth plan that's not ideal. Dear midwife, it took a very long time for us to conceive this child, and we are keen to make sure that the birth goes really well and exactly how we are planning. We want a completely natural birth, and I want the room to be set up nicely with a calm, relaxing atmosphere and music. I am definitely going to use the birth pool for pain relief, and I will probably go on to deliver in there too. I understand that pain relief will interfere with the birth, and so I want to state from the outset that I do not want to be offered any pain relief at all, except for gas and air. My birthing partners, the father of the baby and my mother, will be with me at all times. I would like to avoid any students being present at the birth, as I have had a bad experience in the past, so would not feel comfortable with them taking over any aspects of my care. I am having a natural third stage, and my husband will cut the cord. He can get a bit emotional, and so will need to be watched carefully. I would also really like him to have some skin-to-skin time with the baby after the birth. I am really unsure about the pros and cons of vitamin K, so would appreciate your help in working out if we would like the baby to receive it or not. I want to book a private room, and as I intend to breastfeed, I would like to stay in hospital until my milk flow is regulated and established. Now, if you kept up with that birth plan, well done. I lost my way very, very early on when I first started to read it. In fact, You'd almost need to get a highlighter pen to try and work out what this birth plan is saying. So with all of that that I've just read, let me tell you what it is saying that is relevant to the midwife. The first one is that she would like to use the birth pool. The second one is that she doesn't want to be offered any pain relief unless she asks for it. The third one is that she would like a natural third stage. And the last one is that she would like to have some skin-to-skin time with her baby, and so would her partner. Nothing else in that birth plan is relevant. Everything else is waffle, and she is basically wasting the midwife's time by trying to talk about her life in a way that has no bearing. The rest of the information in there is about you and your job. This is about you taking care of the calm, relaxing atmosphere. This is about you knowing what to do with regards to her oxytocin. This is about you helping support her in the postnatal period after the baby is born and having conversations about the pros and cons of vitamin K so that she can make decisions when it's time. So here is a really good example of a set of birth preferences. I am hypnobirthing. I would like to use the birth pool if it is available. Do not offer me pain relief. I am aware of what is available and will ask for some if required. I would like to leave the umbilical cord to be white and empty before it is cut. I would like immediate skin-to-skin with my baby and am planning to breastfeed. Those are the kinds of things that your midwife wants to know. If there's something she wants to get across that she would like, for example, methods of pain relief, rather than put not to be offered them, she could say something like, I am open to pain relief and my preference when required would be to try the birthing pool and gas and air before an epidural. So there are many ways of writing something in a very small, simple statement that is clear to the midwife and easy to understand. Now, there is some conversations amongst many birthing people about the need for flexibility. And if a woman thinks of her birth plan as set in stone, she's going to be very disappointed if that birth plan doesn't come off, if, you know, she doesn't get the birth of her dreams. So when I talk about birth preferences, it doesn't really matter what type of birth she wants. It could be a vaginal birth, it could be a planned cesarean section, or anything in between. The principles are the same. She has the right to decide what happens to her body. Now, yes, there should be a degree of flexibility because no one can be 100% sure that things won't take a different turn, that the baby won't need support or assistance to help them to be born. But on the whole, when a woman is tuning into her body, listening to her body, working with her body, she is far less likely to need any assistance. She should take ownership of all of the things that she wants to achieve and look in detail about how they can be achieved. So in the birth planning session, you need to have a conversation about her birth plan, about what might go on a birth plan, and what kinds of things that she needs to find out about before making decisions. If she is attending an antenatal course, these things will come up in that course. She will be able to identify what options are available to her with regards to birth management, and that means it will become clear to her what she would like to put on that plan. Then there is also the ability to write a C-section preference sheet. I would recommend everybody do this, regardless of whether they're planning a cesarean or not, because you never know if the birth will end up in a C-section. So sometimes it's better to have had these conversations in advance. But any birth plan that is spoken about and any notes made on her preferences for C-section can be left in the birth bag. It doesn't have to be something that is brought out until necessary. But making sure that she does understand she still has choices to make when it comes to a C-section, being able to ask for you to be around her at all times, being able to ask for things like the screen to be lowered at the point that the baby is being born, to have immediate skin to skin in theatre, which might be very important to her. Knowing that she has the opportunity to ask for those kinds of things can be really, really helpful. So I would recommend that you look up options for C-section preferences just in case that becomes a reality. Introducing the birth plan is your responsibility. Regardless of where she's giving birth, you need to have it ready and know exactly where it is so that you can hand it over easily at the point when any care begins. If she's planning a home birth, when the midwife arrives, I recommend taking the midwife into another room, offering them a drink, asking them to take off their coats, shoes, etc., and then ask them to read the birth preferences before you take them in to meet the labouring woman. Of course, if the baby's coming quickly, that's not going to be necessary, but on the whole, there's usually plenty of time. If it's a hospital birth or midwife-led unit birth, wait to be assigned a midwife, and then when you get the opportunity, hand over the set of preferences to that midwife, asking them to take a look and make sure that they read them. They may want to take them out of the room and read them in their own time, which is fine, but it's just a case of making sure they understand exactly what she wants to achieve. Make sure that you have several copies that in case a shift change does happen, you've always got extras that you can hand out in case the first one or second one has gone missing. One thing that I must cover off before we finish this episode is the subject of coercion. This is a really thorny subject to talk about, and I really hate the idea that anyone is being coerced with regards to their pregnancy, their labour, their birth, their postnatal period. What does coercion even mean? Well, it means that the use of force or intimidation is used to gain compliance. At its extreme, this is where a woman is told her baby could die if she doesn't agree to the recommendations being given to her. This is really not acceptable. This is not acceptable because most hospital guidelines and policies are not actually based on evidence. They're based on people's opinions, people's perceptions, people's experiences. Nothing should ever be a one-size-fits-all policy. Everyone is different. Every birth is different. Every situation is different. So if the woman that you are supporting is being told that the midwife or doctor needs to do something to her, this is incorrect. If, for example, she has written on her birth plan, "I do not want a routine vaginal examination," that means that no midwife should say to her, "Hop up on the bed, I would like to do a vaginal examination." There should be no more discussion. She should not be in a situation where they say, "How are we supposed to know if you're in labour if we don't do a vaginal examination?" The point is, if a woman says no, she means no. She can, of course, change her mind at any time, but she should not be made to have a procedure that she has specifically mentioned she wants to avoid. So make sure that when you go through the list of preferences with her, that you clarify what you might say in a situation just like this one. You need to understand that sometimes you may be in a situation where you have to say stop. And once you've said stop, you then need to engage in a discussion about the options available. No woman in labour has to do anything unless it's her decision. So, any comment, statement, or instruction that does not follow a discussion about consent is therefore not consent. Women need to give consent in all elements of their care, and that does not include someone telling them what is about to happen or doing something to them that they didn't understand. So birth plans are also about her understanding what kinds of questions she may be asked, what kind of decision she may need to make. So in the book, I've written a birth plan checklist so that you can both sit down together and make sure that you fully understand exactly what kinds of things she may be expected to consider when planning her birth, when writing her birth preferences, and if things aren't going well, to be able to recognise what she can do to still remain in control of any given situation. Okay, let's recap and go over what we've spoken about in this episode. Firstly, writing a birth plan does not need to be long and lengthy. My recommendation is half a page of A4 at most. If you can get away with that, that's brilliant. It should definitely not be any more than one side of A4 paper. Next, sit down together and go through the options available and make sure that you fully understand what your role is with regards to her preferences and what a midwife or doctor's role is. So you can only be responsible for so much of it. The midwife or doctor needs to know the rest because those are the things that they need to be responsible for. Lastly, talk about the kinds of things that might be said to her that could indicate that she is not in control, so that you can advocate for her if it becomes necessary. And of course, remember, you can always take the BRAIN acronym everywhere you go. Benefits, risks, alternatives, instincts, and nothing. So ask questions whenever you can. Okay, I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Bye for now. Don't forget about my special offer for the remaining 7 days. If you're listening to this after the 28th of February 2021, I'm afraid you've missed out. However, that doesn't mean you can't give me a 5-star rating and leave me a great review. I would really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner with me, Sally Ann Beresford. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review and don't forget to hit subscribe. If you are on Instagram, you will find me at The Ultimate Birth Partner. Please feel free to follow me for more ideas on supporting women through the birth of a baby. If you would like to purchase a copy of the book that accompanies this podcast, then head over to Amazon and type in Labour of Love, The Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner. If you would like to work with me on a one-to-one basis, visit my website www.birthability.co.uk or email me hello@birthability.co.uk.